Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Thursday, March 8th, 2018. The time is 9 o'clock a.m. We're in the state capitol, fifth floor, room 532. I'm co-chairman Anna McKinnon. Co-chairman Hoffman is on other state business at this moment. With me at the table this morning, Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, ma'am.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning.
Senator Machicki.
Good morning.
Senator Stevens. And Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning to all. Perfect. I will pause for those. We do have a short meeting today, just for those that are following us. We have a 10:30 floor session, so we need to be done about 10:20 so that everyone can make it to the floor. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? On today's agenda, we have two items, SB 92, Vessel Registration Titles Derelict Vessels, and SB 158, Oil Hazard Cleanup and Reimbursement. I'd like to direct the committee's attention to SB 92. It's an act relating to abandoned and derelict vessels. I'd like to invite Rachel to the microphone. A little history on this. We heard this bill on March 1st, 2018. The public hearing was open and closed. We had a few people calling in support of the bill, harbor masters from around the state. We did not review the fiscal notes, and we will not review the fiscal notes today. Ms. Hanke, would you please introduce, Senator Bishop.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 92, version 30-LS0481/U, uniform. Before the committee is our working document.
I'll object for purposes of understanding what the CS does. Rachel Hanke, please identify yourself for the record, your affiliation, and then please proceed with the CS introduction.
For the record, this is Rachel Hanke, staff to Senator Machicki. Most of the changes to Senate Bill 92 are technical or for clarifying language. So if the committee would like, I can just talk about the substantive changes.
Please.
Okay. So the first substantive change is Change 16, which on page 13, lines 19 and 20, rewrites to read, develop and maintain a publicly available database of known public vessels in the state. The way it was previously written sounded like it was a vessel tracking system for all boats, but this just clarifies that the intent was for derelict vessels only. Change 17, page 13, line 31, this adds a new subsection 4, and this will allow the fund to be used to pay for administration costs of the fund. And then change 18, which is page 14, lines 11 through 28. This adds a new subsection that grants departments, municipalities, and peace officers to enforce the chapter.
Thank you very much. I'll remove my objection. Is there further objections to adopting the CS? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill 92, finance/U, is before the committee. Ms. Hanke, could you go over from a high level and tell the people of Alaska what the problem is and what this bill does to address the problem?
Yes, Madam Chair. So Senate Bill 92 rewrites AS 3030, which has been largely unchanged since the mid-70s. It makes procedures for dealing with these derelict vessels around the state clear for local governments and departments of the state. It strengthens vessel owners' due process rights. It expands current boat registration to capture the United States Coast Guard documented vessels and barges, also allows for titling of vessels. It creates a derelict vessels program prevention fund, and the revenue sources for that are the barge registration, which is new, the additional registered documented vessels will go to the boater safety program, actually. And then titles will go into the Derelict Vessel Prevention Program Fund, federal receipts, donations, vessel sales under the chapter, and civil penalties. And the fund shall pay for establishment and administration of the Derelict Vessel Prevention Program, education and community outreach, advisory council to implement these programs, and the derelict vessel database, and also may pay for reimbursement costs of vessel removal on state and municipal property, development and implementation of programs to incentivize compliance with the chapter, subsidizing derelict vessel prevention program projects and fund administration.
Ms. Hanke, I appreciate that detailed explanation. Senator Stevens, followed by Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to make sure I understand this right, that this does not include the requirement for a title, does not include small boats, skiffs, boats of that kind. Is there a certain size we're dealing with, or potentially derelict vessels? Because I can't imagine small boats being on a trailer being potentially being derelict. So help me make sure I understand that correctly.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, all boats that would be required to register would be titled.
And that's my question, I guess, and maybe a question of Senator Michiki. I mean, are we excluding skiffs and those sorts of vessels, or are they included as well?
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stevens, the way the bill is written currently, and we're working through this with DMV, is that if you're required to be registered, which means if you essentially have a motorized boat or a barge, then you'd be required to have a title as well. So a lot of folks, it doesn't include things like canoes unless you have a motor mounted on it, or inflatables or paddle boards or paddle boats or vessels like that. But today, if you're required to, if you have a motorized boat, you're required to have it registered. And the way it sits right now is that would include the titling for those vessels as well.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Senator. So a skiff that's sent by moved by trailer that has an outboard motor on it would be included in this list. And I understand, you know, you have to have a broad, a big net, but, you know, the danger of a skiff sinking and causing problems is nowhere near the problem of a fishing boat or a barge or something like that. So I'm just wondering if maybe there should be some exclusion for smaller vessels.
Senator Michiki.
Well, I think that's something worth talking about. Of course, that shrinks the size of the fund, and a lot of those smaller vessels serve larger vessels, and sometimes they are a part of the problem. Not, of course, the, you know, 16-foot monarchs, but, you know, cabin cruisers and things like that can be quite expensive and hold sometimes a significant amount of fuel. So finding that balance is probably a worthwhile consideration. That would, of course, remove a significant amount of the funding that would help with maintaining derelict vessels in our boats, in our harbors, and on state lands where the impact is the problem. So you have to think about that. It would shrink the fund fairly significantly. But I agree that there's probably a place where that balance should occur. And what I'll say is that we are working with DMV because they brought us some information yesterday, which is, I'll say this as respectfully as possible, at a very, very late hour, that we have some things to work through. And as we work through those issues, may shrink that naturally. So you may get your wish anyway as we work through the bill. So what we want to do is get the CS on the table, and then we have some work to do with DMVA and the Harbor Masters for them to come to some conclusions before we go any further with the bill anyway.
So if I could, go ahead, Senator Stevens.
Just briefly, thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you, Senator, for that explanation. Frankly, I no longer have a Boston Whaler, which I used to have, had an outboard motor on it. If I still had that boat, what would be the requirements of it? What would I have to do? And what would it cost me?
So the requirements today?
No, under this bill.
Under this bill, okay. Well, the requirements today were that we would have to be registered. This bill would add $2 a year to the registration fee for the three-year registration, and it would cost you a one-time titling fee of $20, which is good in perpetuity as long as you own the boat.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Hoffman.
So the fee structure that you described, Senator, is the same for 18-foot Lund and 65-foot yacht?
That is correct, unless the yacht is a documented vessel. I hope I'm answering that correctly. Let's go to Rachel for that question.
Ms. Hanke, if you could put yourself on the record again and then answer Senator Hoffman's question.
For the record, Rachel Hanke, staff to Senator Majiki. So all boat registration is going to be $30 under this bill. The only difference would be for barges, which would be $75 for the three-year period, and the titling is $20 across the board.
And I bring this up because I think that we should consider different fees for maybe different sizes of vessels, 16-foot, 10-foot vessel and a 30-foot vessel and a 65-foot vessel, because I think the impact that each one of those may have to be addressed as a derelict vessel and the prevention program you're requiring is substantially different financially to address as those different sizes are derelict. I don't believe that they're the same.
Senator Majiki.
I happen to agree with you, Senator Hoffman. Remember, the cost today for 3 years is $24. This adds $2 a year. So today, the cost of all of the vessels, no matter what size they are, if they're state registered, is the same price. We don't have a differential. This adds $2 a year for the registration and a one-time $20 titling fee. So if we want to do something different, we would literally be changing the way that it's done today if the bill didn't pass. But I think you make a fair statement, and that is that the impacts to the environment and to municipalities and state lands, this is largely targeted at the larger vessels. I mean, in your district, you have Steamboat Slough, right? And that's the problem we're trying to alleviate by at least. The bill originally had a two-part philosophy. It did have a differential on the cost, because although we would have this structure for registration and titling, which would tell us who owned the vessel, it also had an insurance requirement that would, for the larger vessels, that would provide financial capacity to cover their issues as well. And of course, that had a much higher cost the larger the vessel was. We've removed the insurance piece at this step because we think ownership is the first priority. So the differential, again, the difference if this passes would be $2 a year and a one-time $20 fee for titling. I suppose we could do something higher to title the larger vessels and something lower to title the smaller vessels, since you are correct, the impact that we're trying to alleviate is from larger vessels.
And my response, I guess, is let's not look at past history as the right decision. Let's look at setting the policy today that makes sense.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Hoffman. To recap for the people of Alaska, we have boats that are entering Alaska waters either outside of Alaska ownership, or Alaskans who are leaving sometimes shorelines, coastline, or abandoned vessels afloat somewhere where a Coast Guard or harbor masters or other Alaskans are encountering these vessels, and they are sometimes harming the environment, sometimes creating a safety hazard. Is that fair, Senator Michicki?
Well, yes, Madam Chair, and it has impacts all over the state. There are thousands of vessels that are derelict and abandoned that we know of. And we have 3,100 vessels between 28-foot and 59-foot that are more than 45 years old. So we know that those are the next in line for causing the issues that we're seeing today. We're trying to get in front of it. But I mean, the senator brings up a good point that we're not concerned with the smaller vessels. And this was largely targeted at the ones that go from costing a few dollars to remove from the water if we can determine that they're at risk to tens of thousands to millions to remove from the waters once they do sink. And just knowing who owns these vessels would allow us to deal with the issue in a much, much earlier, long before they end up on the bottom. And that's essentially the target of the legislation.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. And so it's up to us as a finance committee prior to this bill being sent to the floor to make sure that we send a quality product that actually solves the problem or at least takes the first step. And Senator Michicki is open to suggestions. Senator Michicki, is that correct?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
And so I would appreciate with the longevity of all the folks around this table to provide as much feedback as possible to address the problem this year and not wait for years to come. We know that it is much easier in this building to kill things than it is to advance items that are intended to protect the public, but will impact the public in different ways, whether it's through a registration fee to help us look at the issue and define the issue and then address the issue. It was brought to our attention, though, that these cleanups can sometimes run into the millions of dollars, as was testified back on March 1st to us by at least one problem. And so I know that I have heard privately or in the halls of the Capitol that is this a cost shift from local communities' responsibility over to the state? And so that is a concern as we move forward and who's liable for these things. And I think under Senator Michicki's bill, at least the first step is saying the person who owns the vessel is the person that should be responsible for the disposal of the vehicle. And we certainly see that in our roadways with cars and trucks. People are held accountable for those vehicles when they abandon them, and our courts go after those people if they cause accidents or if they're involved in accidents. Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, I really appreciate your comment about longevity around the table. You avoided saying derelict, but so that was pleasant. I guess another concern I have is I think you've done a great job on clarifying the database that it's not meant to track. It's just for derelict vessels. But I guess I'm concerned about the definition of derelict. I mean, we can all see a boat that looks really in bad shape and really old and could be considered derelict, but often vessels have more serious problems below the waterline that we don't see, obviously. Who's to decide which vessel is derelict? What are the criteria for making that decision?
Senator Michicki.
Well, so I don't know how much time you've spent in the Homer Harbor, or in any...
It's in my district, so I spent considerable time there, as it was in your district.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Michicki.
Okay. Reality of it is you can see it happening to these vessels. You can see it happening. They get less and less maintenance. They get less and less usage. They have more and more growth, and it's just a matter of time. Pretty soon the batteries lose power. They start sitting really low in the water. It takes one big snowstorm, and suddenly the municipality has a $25,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 bill in their hands. And by golly, we don't know who owns it because they haven't paid up on their fees, and they moved to Oklahoma 6 months ago. So what this allows us to do is we would know who owned the vessel, and when it starts looking like we know they start looking, we can deal with it. Get the boat out of the water, keep it off the bottom, and keep it from... Make it be a few thousand dollar situation where we can bill the owner. We'll know who the owner is. We can bill the owner, as opposed to it ending up on the bottom costing, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars and not knowing who owns the vessel. So the municipality is responsible for vessels that are not paying their mortgage fees. We can start dealing with it in a place where we can, as opposed to what happens now. They tow it to a place where it ends up in state waters, and suddenly it's in the channel, and the state is on the hook for it. So this gives us a method of beginning to deal with the problem early in the process.
Senator Machicki, I appreciate those comments. Senator Stevens, I appreciate the question. Mm-hmm. What I'd like as a outcome from that is a definition on what a derelict ship is, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So in response to Senator Stevens' question, just like art is in the eye of the beholder, and I think it's fair for Alaskans to know how we are going to define what is derelict. So Senator Stevens, thank you. I understand the passion, Senator Machicki, that you just know. The people of Alaska will want to know, I think, at least some criteria that we're looking at, whether it's notification that we're receiving from someone that's, you know, that we receive it twice, or maybe we could work with the Department of Law if the definition isn't as clear as we would like it to be in the current legislation before us. We do have Mr. Lands with the U.S. Coast Guard here today, and he is available for questions. Mr. Lands, if you want to join us at the microphone, I know that you provided testimony on the first. Do you have a piece of information that might inform the committee on the, if we see something, how do we know it's derelict, or other comments for us? Senator Mike Bishop, did you have a question first?
You nailed it.
Okay.
I was going to ask what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you. Lieutenant Commander Graham Lands, for the record, from the Coast Guard 17th District Legal Office. The Coast Guard doesn't have a definition for derelict or abandoned. We regulate vessels based on their intended service. So if it's a passenger vessel that needs a certificate of inspection, we determine whether it's fit to carry passengers, or if it's a recreational vessel that maybe has severe problems, we can say that it's manifestly unsafe for a particular voyage, but for to just be allowed to sit in the water, we don't make a decision on when it is no longer safe to be seaworthy at all.
I'm thinking, Mr. Lands, of overdue parking. You know, for an urban area girl, you know when your car has been parked too long, you're sighted in a particular location, but nothing like that happens just floating on the water. Senator Machicki, do you have any questions or comments?
I don't, Madam Chair. I'm looking for the place, and perhaps Rachel is ready to answer that question on the definition of a derelict vessel. I know it's in the bill. If you could go to Ms. Hankey, Madam Chair.
Ms. Hankey.
Rachel Hankey, staff to Senator Machicki. On page 12, line 3, section 22, which is AS 3030090, this gives various situations where a vessel would be considered derelict.
Ms. Hankey, could you pause for a moment? Where I think members are trying to get to where you said. So it was page 3, line... page 12, line...
Line 3, section 22.
Section 22. Thank you. Just wanted members to be able to get there. Thank you so much. Please continue.
This section provides various situations where a vessel would be considered derelict.
Thank you, Ms. Hankey. Senator Bishop.
I just want to go back to the Coast Guard, Mr.
Commander.
Commander? Yep. You said you don't have a definition for derelict, but you do have, I mean, obviously you're the Coast Guard and you got protocol for what's seaworthy and what's not seaworthy. So that's what your determination is, correct? Because theoretically, could a derelict vessel, just for conversation here,
if you could make that seaworthy again with a lot of elbow grease and in a Coast Guard inspection. Is that correct?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, for the record, Graham Lands again. That's correct, Senator. Yeah, certainly we wouldn't want to be the agency to say we're taking away your property and not giving you the opportunity to fix it up if it's. I guess we don't make the decision on when a boat is no longer fixable, just when it's no longer safe to get underway.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Other questions for the commander? Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, madam.
So, Senator Machicki, if you could work with Senator Stevens on the language that you have for derelict vessel definition, that would be helpful. Senator Stevens, if you could provide feedback. On line 30, on page 12, the vessel has been anchored, moored, stored, abandoned, or otherwise left unattended on private property without authorization by the owner or occupant of the property. So that's a minute or a day, or there's no time period listed there. It's derelict. And we don't need to wordsmith this now. Senator Machicki, I'm just asking you to work with Senator Stevens. He raised the issue.
Certainly, Madam Chair. I'm not going to read through the section, but what you can tell by the section is what it's saying is if the vessel is in that place where it's in immediate danger of sinking or has sunk, or we're unable to determine ownership, or it's in a place illegally, is what is the definition of a derelict vessel. So essentially the vessels that are causing the problem around the state is how we arrived at that definition.
Senator Machicki, I support the bill and the process going forward. On line 8 and 9, having a boat on the water is endangering the environment or could be construed to endanger the environment. And so I just think we might want to look at the positive and the negative consequences by some of the language that is in the section. And we just want Alaskans to be clear what their responsibility is to keep their boats in a usable, safe condition, right? I mean, Senator Von Imhoff, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I recall in previous testimony, I believe the woman was Rachel Lord, also talked about derelict versus abandoned, and that there was nuances with the two. And one of the focus of the task force was to marry up and resolve the issues between the two, because if a boat is deemed derelict over abandoned or vice versa, there are different consequences and actions. And so I recall that we talked about that, I believe, in resources, but it's not clear in my mind what the ultimate decision was, how to combine those two, and what the resulting actions were. So maybe that as well, just a quick summary on that. I forgot.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. I also would like to put on the record that I support at least the concept that Senator Hoffman was discussing as far as a tiered approach to some of the larger vessels, because they are more likely to cause more public safety issues than smaller vessels that are easy to remove or easy in the sense of weight to either bring up from the bottom of the ocean or off of someone's property. So I personally think that that's a good idea. I understand totally why, or in its entirety, why Senator Machicki brought it forward, changing the rules of which folks buy boats on in small ways versus large ways. But that does seem like a good idea. Ms. Henke, do you have any closing comments as we set this bill aside for today?
No, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
I just wanted to respond to Senator Von Imhoff briefly. They collapsed the definition because there's really one way to deal with this, and that is when you get to that point. So
quick.
If I'm sorry? Oh. Folks that operate municipal harbors, they like boats. They want all their stalls filled with boats. They want all their stalls filled with boats of people that pay their mortgage fees and that operate safe vessels. There's no one looking to the last thing you want to do is take ownership or for the state to take ownership of a derelict vessel. So I think it became quite clear that separating the two really didn't have any function. When a vessel is derelict by this definition here, someone has to deal with it, and we increased the tools or provided additional tools to help the state deal with the vessel, in my view, to get it out of the water before it ends up on the bottom. And we've talked about that a lot. So we have some work to do on the titling, and I really don't have any desire to change the registration, the way boats are registered in the state of Alaska. We look for a way to provide additional registration requirements for the vessels that are at risk. So we can talk about that and see if we can come together on the best way for this to move forward, Madam Chair. But I appreciate you hearing it this morning, and we will get together with the harbor masters and the folks at this table and see what we can do to get there.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to set aside Senate Bill 92. The CS is out there for review, and we can get an updated fiscal note now with that on the table. I appreciate the committee members' comments regarding this important issue. The next item before the committee is Senate Bill 158. It's an act relating to oil and hazardous substances and waiver of cost recovery for containment and cleanup of certain releases and providing for an effective date. I'd like to bring Kristen Ryan to the table, the Director of Spill Prevention and Response Division for DEC. Ms. Ryan, if you would put your name on the record, and then please present your bill.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and Committee. My name is Kristen Ryan. I am the Director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the State of Alaska.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. This morning, we are looking at legislation that the department has proposed and the governor has supported that would allow us to have some flexibility in recovering state costs related to the cleanup of small heating oil spills related to homes. The state statutes currently are very strict and require us to recover 100% of our costs. And what we have found with small homeowners is that is a very difficult situation after, on top of dealing with a spill at their home that they're already overwhelmed with. The cleanup at a home can range from anywhere from $6,000 to, we're aware of one in Juneau, costing up to $80,000. Homeowners insurance policies don't cover the costs of those cleanups. That is a huge unexpected hit to a homeowner. And then on top of that, they receive a bill from us for providing technical assistance. We want to help them resolve their cleanup problem as quickly and cheaply as possible. We aren't doing the cleanup. They are still responsible for those cleanup costs, but because of the way the statute is currently written, we are obligated to send them a bill for the time we take to answer their questions and perhaps guide them through the cleanup process. We have found it inhibits people talking to us because they don't want a bill, to the point where they'll deny us access to their property because they know if they allow us access, we will be turning around and billing them for that access. We believe that the benefit to the state is cleaning up spills as quickly as possible before they impact other property or perhaps other resources. So we think it's in the best interest of the state that we provide that technical assistance to help them do that as quickly as possible and so that we can reduce the impacts that are occurring from the release. We tried to craft the the language to be specific to small homeowners that we feel are probably least able technically to deal with the event that has occurred. They have no expertise usually in this. They receive fuel, and that's about the closest connection they have to what's occurred. And that we can provide that kind of assistance to get them to a place of cleaning up the and perhaps protecting the people that live in the home from vapors and things that could be hazardous to their health. About 2% of our spills a year are related to homes. We have about 2,000 spills a year. So it's a very small piece of our work, but we find it takes quite a bit of our time for the reasons I've already mentioned. When a company spills that's dealing with oil, they have the expertise and the resources to address it, and our oversight is less intense as it is with a homeowner who has no idea what they're doing and is really struggling to deal with the problem. There is a fiscal impact to this. Our costs associated with a home spill range from $200 for a phone call to $4,000 perhaps if we go out and try to explain and give them advice about where to put absorbent pads or where they can go buy them, providing a little bit more hands-on assistance. But we believe that is an expense that will pay dividends in the end if we can help them clean it up quicker and perhaps save them a little bit of money rather than having to hire an expensive contractor. If we can guide them a little bit, if it's a small spill, it will save them money in the end. The money that we collect from cost recovery goes into the prevention account, which is utilized by the legislature to provide us our annual operating costs. So this money does not, it's not like a permit fee. It doesn't roll into our annual budget. We don't see this money that year. It just goes into the savings account is how I describe it. That is used by the legislature to allocate our annual funding to us. So there's no immediate impact to our budget from the reduction in revenue that would occur with this legislation. It would reduce the amount of money overall going into the prevention account, though. There are several other sources of funds that go into the prevention account that we believe are adequate to cover our costs for several years into the future. One in particular that this body passed several years ago was almost a penny tax on refined fuel. So these individuals are contributing to our funds now when they purchase this fuel source that has spilled. So in a way, we feel like they're already paying for our services to provide technical assistance when they buy the gas, and then we're turning around and billing them when they spill it for assistance. So in our opinion, the reduction in revenue is worth the value we will gain in cleaning up the environment and helping these individuals who are highly stressed and in a very difficult situation, and we'd like to provide them assistance.
Senator Vandenbach, question?
Thank you. We also heard this bill in resources, and you gave a very thorough presentation then and now, so thank you for that. The testimony we heard at that point, too, was very apparent that people were hesitant to contact you for fear of an additional bill, but your expertise is sorely needed in those situations as well. The question that I have is, you did just mention that you receive an annual income, you said a penny a gallon. How much is that roughly that you're receiving? Can you comment on that?
Senator Von Ivanoff, through the chair, I'm laughing because Senator Matiki was the impetus of that. It's 0.095 cents per gallon.
Ms. Ryan, that is not the entire amount of money that you received. That was an increase that we had. And so I believe Senator Von Imhoff's question is, how much total do you receive in? That was an increase that we did to try to stabilize the fund a couple of years ago.
Madam Chairman, it is, yes, you're correct. There are two sources that go into the fund. One is the 0.095 cents per gallon of refined fuel. There are some exemptions to who pays that, but it generates, the dust hasn't completely settled as to how much revenue is generated from that. There were some unexpected exemptions when the bill went through that have now come to light. We believe that will end up generating approximately $6 million a year.
$6 million.
Correct. That is on top of a 4 cent per barrel of oil that comes down the pipeline that has been in the books for several years. And because of declining production, we were seeing a decline in that revenue stream, which is why the refined fuel tax was implemented.
Other questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ryan, what's the release amount that constitutes a recordable spill?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, it varies depending on the receiving environment. You are required to notify us pretty much of any spill. The question is more when. If it's to the water, we are to be told immediately. If it's to land and it's a small amount, then, for example, a larger company on the North Slope provides us a monthly report of minor spills rather than calling us for every little one. But I can provide you the specifics and regulation as to when amounts are to be reported.
No, that's not necessary. I can take a look. Thanks.
Are there any questions on the bill? Ms. Ryan, the sectional is small, but could you walk us through? We typically try to do that, so if someone's following us at home, they understand what the sections of the bill is intended to accomplish.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Section 1 provides an exception to the existing mandatory cost recovery requirement. Section 2 allows the department to adopt regulations to waive cost recovery efforts in situations defined by the proposed legislation. Section 3 establishes the reasons the department may waive cost recovery efforts. The department must find the release was from a home or a building with four or fewer housing units. The release was not willful and was reported to the department immediately. The homeowner took immediate measures to stop and contain the release. The homeowner granted access to the property and is cooperative. Section 4 establishes the ability for the department to adopt regulations. Section 5 makes sections 1 through 3 of the legislation retroactive to January 2018. Section 6 allows the department to adopt regulations immediately.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you identify what you mean by small homeowners? Who does that include? Who does it exclude? You said that small, this deals with small homeowners, and what size are we talking about? A square foot of a house? Number of rooms? I don't know.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, thank you for pointing out my error. All homeowners, there's no small, in my mind, I meant small spills. To us, the homeowners are small spillers. But the way the legislation is written, any size home would be meet the exemption requirement.
Thank you.
Ms. Ryan, you did say there was some unexpected exemptions to the bill that we passed previously on the 0.9597, I don't recall. I know it was under a penny because that was how the sponsor presented it on the Senate floor. Just for our edification, as we move into public testimony, what are some unexpected exemptions that we thought we were going to recover funds from that we did not?
Madam Chairman, the most significant one was municipalities purchasing fuel for heat generation activities. That was a very significant exemption that reduced, if you recall, the fiscal note we initially had assumed it would generate $7.6 million, I believe, and it dropped to $6 million in actual revenue generation. With that, there was one other exemption I can't recall off the top of my head, but the biggest one was municipalities and power generation in villages.
Power generation in villages. Okay.
If I may, there was a section in the statute. If you are implementing a tax, we didn't cross-reference that other section, a tax that would apply to municipalities or local governments, and we did not cite that additional statute, which is how they say it was. That's how they've decided it was not included.
Ms. Ryan, is there spills with municipalities? that they don't that the state becomes partially responsible for?
Madam Chairman, yes. Wherever fuel is used, there are spills. Our cost recovery laws require them to address it. Is the state on the hook occasionally? If they can't, yes. But our first goal is always to have the responsible party address the problem.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 158, an act relating to oil and hazardous substances and waiver of cost recovery. In the room, we have Fabian Peters-Contess. I'm sure I've not said that exactly right, so please join us at the microphone, your name for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Fabian Peters-Contess. While I do work for the state of Alaska, I'm here public providing testimony on a personal behalf. I'm a 37-year resident of the city and borough of Juneau, and I support SB 158, which would allow DEC to waive the cost recovery for small oil spills in residential units. We had an underground oil tank leak and in our home in Juneau, and when we discovered the leak, we immediately called DEC. We had one of their fine people come out and advise us on what to do. We immediately hired a contractor, got the tank opened up, cleaned out, filled with concrete, and immediately started all the on-site cleanup ourselves. We also consulted with a contractor in Juneau who did some soil or some plume testing to determine where the oil had flowed. We've spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars on this effort. This is all out of our pocket. Homeowners insurance does not cover this type of spill. I believe it only possibly would cover a spill if it crossed into a neighbor's property, and that is questionable as well. So we've worked very, very well and collaboratively with the Department of Environmental Conservation and their staff. And in 2017, we started to get bills. And these were bills from them to read emails, to read our case files, to transfer our case file to another section in DEC, to respond, to send letters to us, to type up letters, and we would get billed in 15-minute increments. So in addition to out-of-pocket expenses for the spill that we are 100% responsible for and are working with DEC to continue to clean up, we were getting billed for their day-to-day operations. Now, I'm extremely familiar with the fiscal situation in the state of Alaska, and I believe we need to look for revenue sources wherever is reasonable and cover state expenses where it's reasonable. But what this does is puts a barrier between the public and the Department of Environmental Conservation. The willingness I have now to communicate with them is limited. In fact, I received a letter from them this week, and I expect I will receive a bill for them writing that letter. So I am hesitant to continue that very collaborative relationship because of the additional expenses it will bring, you know, that I will be burdened with. I'm in a very fortunate position. I can afford to, you know, clean up our oil spill and pay the bills, but there are many, many people who are in less fortunate positions who will not be able to spend the money and who will be significantly burdened just with the oil spill cleanup on their own property, let alone getting billed by the department for a minimal amount of revenue, I believe $60,000 or $75,000 a year. I can't remember the total amount that is coming in. And in addition, we also pay the small percentage on fuel tax that goes into the spill response fund already. So I would encourage you to support this bill. It really, we are on the same page with DEC. We really want the same thing. We want to clean up the environment and clean up the spill. And so I would welcome any questions and again, encourage you to support this bill.
Are there questions from committee members?
Senator Bishop. Just a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Fabian, thank you for bringing your story to this committee. I've had some similar stories in Fairbanks, and the situation that you've outlined is identical to their situation. So thank you for coming before us today.
Senator Stevens?
No questions.
Thank you for your testimony today. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 158, either here in Juneau, off-net, or online? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop, are you prepared to comment on this bill now?
I'm ready.
Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I don't want to slow anything down. I have a brief question for Ms. Ryan when we get to that point.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Department of Environmental Conservation, Spill Prevention and Response. Allocation, Spill Prevention and Response, OMB component number 3094. Ms. Ryan did a marvelous job of kind of going through the fiscal note inside the bill, and I'll just paraphrase it in a nutshell, in the essence of time for today, and I can read it again in detail if the chairman wants at the next hearing, but it's a $60,000 decrement, and that's it in a nutshell. She explained why the decrement was there and where it was going, and it's $60,000 of DGF funds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Bishop. Ms. Ryan, if you could join us back at the microphone. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ryan, when we passed the other bill, one of the desires I had is that we were going to increase outreach to homeowners with, and I support this bill. I know it's been frustrating for a lot of my constituents as well, considering only half the folks on the Kenai have natural gas energy, the rest are using heating oil. But have we increased our outreach when we talked about guards on filters and tubing going to the house and things like that to try to alleviate? I mean, this $60,000 could easily be made up with some of that outreach, if folks would take that potential a little bit more seriously.
For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response. Senator Machicki, through the chair, we have spent quite a bit of time going to home building association meetings and fairs where people go to learn about different products for their houses. So we have tried to do some outreach in those scenarios. Something both you and Senator Bishop had asked at the passage of that last legislation was an increase in prevention more generally as well. We see, when we look at our spill numbers, the majority of our spills are occurring where fuel is stored in larger volumes. We only regulate tanks of 420,000 gallons or larger. So we really have no role with prevention regulations below that threshold. That's a lot. I mean, if you think about it, that's 420,000 gallons is a big tank farm. So the majority of the fuel storage in Alaska was not touched by us unless they had a spill. The first step we took was recently drafting regulations, and they are now effective, is requiring tanks below that threshold down to 1,300 gallons, so not quite to the homeowner, but capturing a big middle swath, to register with us. Just tell us who you are. We wanted to start this relationship with them so that we could start to provide that technical assistance. We don't want to move into an enforcement paradigm yet with them because they're, I think, going to be inadequately prepared for that scenario. But if we can start a relationship of providing technical assistance, then I'm hoping at some point we can move to a system where they're falling in line with pretty standard procedures. But right now they don't even know what those procedures are. So we've started that. That's the first step we've taken, as we've required them to register with us, and we have over, I believe, 2,000 that have submitted those cards to us now. So we can start to have a dialogue with them and start to share information with them about how to maintain their tanks and perhaps provide the training. I have one staff dedicated to that effort that we have pulled out of our other work, so that's all they focus on. So that's occurred. The next layer of homes is trickier. Setting standards in regulation is my goal. The difficulty is standards will be hard to be applied universally across Alaska for how a home heating oil tank should be maintained in a small community in Alaska versus the Soldotna, where they have access to resources, and it may be easier to get the equipment they need to do it in a way we would deem safe. So we're toying with how to set a standard right now that would be protective yet universally applicable to all of Alaska, which is something we struggle with, I know, in a lot of areas in the state. But that's where I'm at.
Senator Machicki, follow up?
Not necessarily, although I manage a facility for your other program and had to fill out your little sheet there, and I support that, but I just, the greatest potential around Alaska are folks that have the least financial capacity to deal with it. So I wasn't thinking about regulation. I was more thinking about outreach that perhaps fuel companies that deliver provide to the homeowner, so mm-hmm. they have some ideas of the safest way to keep from having a spill. So anyway, that's enough of that, but thank you very much for that answer.
Senator Bishop? Thank you, Ms. Ryan. With that, we'll set aside, amendments are due by 5 o'clock on Friday. Is there anything else to come before the committee? On tomorrow's agenda, we only have bills previously heard. I'm unsure if anything will be ready, so I will let everyone know. We'll scrub what we have inside of our system and see if there's anything that we can bring back up tomorrow. With that, we're adjourned.